commission I have appointed today will examine intelligence on weapons of mass destruction and related 21st century threats and issue specific recommendations to ensure our capabilities are strong.
President Bush on Friday announcing the formation of a bipartisan commission, independent commission, to investigate intelligence failures on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. Jan Shore is off this week. Joining us to review the week's news is our friend John Parker of The Economist magazine. John, thanks for being back with us.
Thanks very much.
And the president had, as we note, initially rejected the idea of naming a panel to investigate this very issue. In your judgment, what changed his mind?
Well, of course, there was a bit of unease on Capitol Hill, a sense that there was something profoundly wrong. I suppose there was a possibility, which may have weighed in his mind, that it will take this off the table during the election campaign. I must say I'd regard that as really no bad thing. I mean, you could say maybe this is playing politics with it, but I think something has gone profoundly wrong, and you do need to sort of discuss that away from the partisan bickering or arguments of an election year. But I think the main thing was obviously the sense that if you compare the national intelligence estimates, which was the intelligence services sort of best judgment on Iraq, with what we now know, I mean, they really, really did get it wrong. They said that there were chemical weapons stockpiles and activity, and there weren't. They said there was biological weapons activity and stockpiles, and there weren't.
This is dating back to the Clinton administration that includes British intelligence, French intelligence.
As Pat Roberts, the Senate intelligence chairman, said, this was a world intelligence failure. Everybody got it wrong. The Americans got it wrong. The British got it wrong. The Germans got it wrong. Mm-hmm. The Israelis, the French, everyone. Nobody's sort of really come out smelling very well on this, except actually, funnily enough, possibly the one agency which got even slightly right was the State Department's in-house team, which said that there probably wasn't a big nuclear weapons threat.
Speaking of nuclear weapons, there's a transition. The man who's identified as the father of Pakistan's nuclear weapons program, Abdul Qadir Khan, apologized to the people of Pakistan Wednesday, nationally televised address, for selling nuclear secrets to North Korea, Libya, and Iran. He was pardoned, more or less instantaneously, by President Musharraf of Pakistan.
And called a national hero. It was an extraordinary story. He went on TV to admit what, by any normal standards, would be one of the most severe and damaging things that has ever happened to a country, which is that he'd been selling really quite substantial amounts of military secrets to other countries, to Libya and to Iran. I mean, what he's been accused of, and the sort of pattern we've understood from his admission, is really breathtaking. It's almost like ordering a computer from Dell. You know, there's you can sort of buy off-the-shelf components for making nuclear bombs. There was a sort of big network of middlemen. There was even a sort of tech support system. You know, you could phone up if you weren't able to make the nuclear devices properly.
Wonder what kind of music they played. Like you were on hold for 48 minutes.
Who the interns were. The reason's interesting, I think. He did get away with something. And I think the reason for that is the sort of extreme fragility of the Musharraf regime and the worry that certainly Americans have that what on earth would we do if Musharraf were overthrown? And because of that worry, I think they've sort of colluded with this, you know, just slap on the wrist.
Pardoned him rather than start an upheaval in Pakistan.
Yeah, I mean, I think the worry is that this could, you know, hurt Musharraf, and they really, I mean, America except went along with the pardon, didn't. I mean, just imagine if a North Korean scientist had admitted to all this. Yeah. You know, the reaction would be very severe, but I think America's so worried about the Musharraf regime that they said, okay, well, that's more important.
Let's turn to politics here. Senator Kerry won 5 of 7 primaries on Tuesday and has been picking up a raft of endorsements. Senator Lieberman has withdrawn. Howard Dean has indicated that if he doesn't win the Wisconsin primary February 17th, he would leave the race, too. Is Senator Kerry, look, we got to be careful with predictions this year. Is Senator Kerry, does he seem to you now on a train that cannot be stopped?
I think the electability express is sort of pulling out of the station. And I think probably the only person who would really be able to stop that would be John Edwards. But Kerry's won 5 out of 7 7 out of 9 states, and 5 of those states are swing states that the Democrats have to do well in November. This week we had the first test of Latino votes in Arizona. He did the best of any candidate with those voters. Missouri had the big first test of African Americans living in big cities. He did the best there. He's got, you know, union backing. He's got sort of every constituency of the Democratic Party on his side. Edwards's win in South Carolina, I do think, suggests that he might be able to emerge as an alternative. He does very well among independents, for example, much better than Kerry. So he's got a slightly different appeal. The problem for him, I think, is that he hasn't really freed himself quite of the challenge of Wesley Clark, who won in Oklahoma. And so they're continuing sort of to divide the votes of more conservative or more moderate, especially Southern Democrats.
Let me ask about the president's standing, because his approval ratings have dipped below 50% for the first time in his presidency. And there are polls that show that Senator Kerry would win a direct matchup. Now, Senator Kerry has benefited from a lot of publicity recently, favorable publicity, but the President of the United States gets a lot of publicity. What do you make of these poll findings now and the White House reaction?
I wouldn't make too much of those hypothetical matchups. I think that doesn't really, you know, the election's a long way away. But I do think it's a reminder that, you know, in the 50-50 nation, the president really can't count on the support of much more than half the population. The favourable, unfavourable ratings are in the danger zone. And if you look at the sort of more specific issues, the voters have actually a net unfavourable rating on the economy, on Iraq, on foreign affairs. And also, I think this has been very, very sudden. I mean, if you look about a month ago, Bush was still riding relatively high on the capture of Saddam Hussein and so on. Since the State of the Union, it's really gone through the floor. I think that is worrying for the White House. The question is this just a temporary thing, you know, against the background of the weapons of mass destruction and the Democratic primary? Or is there some sort of more profound possibility that the administration sort of overreached and American people aren't going with him?
And there's a $2.4 trillion budget. There's going to be some battle over that.
That doesn't exactly help, I agree. I mean, there's a huge budget deficit, and I think that sense on the campaign, I think, is really an issue of, is it he can't be trusted with the public finances, or is this, you know, necessary spending during a war and a recession? That's a sort of 50-50 debate, I would say.
A couple of questions to wind up with. The Massachusetts Supreme Court affirmed this week their decision allowing gays the constitutional right to marry. They reject the idea that civil unions are a sufficient compromise. How significant could this decision be?
I think it makes the issue sharper this year. It doesn't change the issue itself all that much. The Massachusetts Supreme Court last year said that we need to recognize gay marriage under the Constitution. Thus, the Massachusetts Senate went back and said, would civil unions do? As it were, that's the Vermont Compromise. And they came back this week and said, no, it wouldn't. So I think there's really an issue, you know, it's sort of a gay marriage in Massachusetts or nothing. And I think that might put it on the agenda for this year, the bigger agenda of the election campaign. And we're already seeing signs that the White House is thinking about endorsing a proposed change to the federal Constitution, which would ban it.
Finally, Janet Jackson, Super Bowl, bare flesh. Really the end of civilization?
The end of civilization. There's a lawsuit against this naked display of ambition for pain and suffering. I love the politician's reaction, actually, for this. Bush said that he didn't see it because he goes to bed before halftime. Kerry said he wasn't paying attention because he was so happy that the New England Patriots had gone to Texas and won. And Dean said he's a doctor, he's seen it all before. So the political choice this year seems to be between sleepy, happy, or doc.
Thank you, John Parker, the economist.